Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, car, what else?
Cars.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it. No.
But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. We have a guest. Tony, it's not just you and I this week.
Don't swear. Be on your best behaviour.
It's not a girl. You told me, you promised me a girl.
I never promised you a girl. You were hoping it's a girl because I think you're a little bit of a pervert.
No, I'm not a pervert. Nice to have some female company.
It would have been nice to have some female company another week, I promise. Because this week, it's Tim. It's Shmee150. He's here.
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry to disappoint you, Tony.
No, it's fine.
Well, I constantly disappoint Tony, so welcome to the club. But look, thank you so much for coming and joining us here on the podcast. You're our first guest, I think, of 2021. We may have had Paul Wallace on at some point, but it's easy to forget Paul Wallace. So
he's not really a guest.
He's not really a guest. Let's pretend you're our first guest.
He lives here.
Yeah. He doesn't. Where does he live? Here?
In the corner.
He has a very nice flat, have you know?
He has got a very nice flat, actually, yeah.
The resident guest.
He is our go-to, basically, when no one else is free. We call Paul Wallace because he's never doing anything else. But to clarify, because you just got back from America. Like, I mean, literally, I think online yesterday, right? Or something.
Yeah, something like that.
So a little bit confusing, but you have done the various quarantines and things like that you need to do to be here.
Stay at home, unlimited numbers of tests, basically, the isolation test to release, we're all good. Lots of negative tests.
Has traveling been a headache or actually a bit of a relief in some way? Like, do you feel like you've escaped some of the mayhem, but actually...
I quite enjoyed the last 12 months of not being on a plane every second or third day. The previous 12 months to all everything changing was just way too much for me.
Because you've done long stints in certain countries, right?
So I spent an extended period in Germany through the rest of 2020, and I've started the whole of this year so far in the US. And while I've driven from place to place, I feel like you have more control over what you're doing and less of that last minute pressure to run to an airport and check bags in and deal with the whole kerfuffle of traveling.
And actually, do you know what? I mean, I'm not a big YouTube watcher or stat man, but you've done the right thing going to America, because what else would you have done in this country? Well, sat in your pants like Paul.
This is turning into a Paul Wallace bashing episode.
So it wasn't intentional. I left the UK and then the UK decided to lock down. So well, I'm not going to go back. I put in a huge amount of money to get a work visa for the US. So I was like, right, I'll go work in the US.
Yeah, fair.
That's exactly it. I think it's so funny. I never told you this, but over Christmas, when things were looking like they might lock down, I was looking at Dubai as well as the whole of the world of social media was going, oh, maybe I should go to Dubai a couple of weeks, just bank some content before I come back. I was going back and forth whether to do it. My family said, well, what if you don't go? I said, well, if I don't go, Shmee will. I think the next day you put a story up being like, off to Dubai. I was like, damn it, I missed it.
And you can be sure I was there before I said I was there.
I know you are.
did you go to Dubai as well?
Back in December.
Yeah.
Before Christmas. Just before the UK closed up shop, basically.
Oh, yeah.
I was gone. And the plan was to come back to the UK. But then, of course, we were in Dubai when the UK decided to close up. And at that point, it was kind of like, well now we're outside of the US travel ban, which bans you from going into the US if you've been in Europe on the previous 14 days. Well, it was kind of like, well, I'm in Dubai. I can go to America. So I bought a one-way flight all the way from Dubai to Chicago. It was a 15-hour flight. Not much fun, but then it was like, yeah, let's stay here.
And I think, as a lot of people maybe didn't understand at the time, is you were obviously following, as you always do, every letter of laws and restrictions.
Absolutely, by the rules
guidance,
with tests and everything like that. It's super confusing because there's such a timetable element to this now. the rules change within days, within weeks. So what was relevant at the time I filmed it might be different at the time I published it. And that's the stupidly confusing thing.
Of course. And, you know, I think it was tough for people. You know, I mean, it's been damn boring here, I'm going to be honest, for the last 3 months or so. And so it was easy to look at somebody who looked like maybe they had appeared to have not bent a rule, but just, you know, basically done something which... Well, they all wanted to do.
Not helped by the articles in the Daily Mail about influencers going partying.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's obviously not my thing at all. My thing is go film a car and then order Deliveroo or Uber Eats and sit down in front of my laptop.
We never doubted it. I've been on enough trips with you to know that it wasn't going to be glamorous, but it was going to be content that we wanted to watch. So fair play to you. Well, look, thank you for joining us. We're going to do a little bit of chat. We've got a tiny bit of car news, nothing that major. Tony's got some inside track on something very interesting, which we're going to be discussing. But actually, we want to pick up on something we discussed last week. So last week we did a sort of episode talking about YouTuber car collections. You were mentioned. Tony was quite nice.
I didn't go in on you.
Thank you.
No, not that bad.
You were all right, actually. You were ruder right about other people. You weren't that rude in general.
I wasn't that rude. No. I'm right, me.
But we were talking about whether nowadays this sort of, you know, car collecting in general, but car collecting for YouTube, like, does it make sense still? Like, how does it work? What are the benefits and the potential losses, and how outside of YouTube maybe car collecting culture is changing? So that'll be the main topic that we'll come back to. Now, we have to talk about a car which Tony nearly ordered, sort of.
Or did.
Or did, or didn't. I don't really know. The Koenigsegg Jimera. Tim, you recently had a go on...
I got a passenger ride in the Jimera, in the prototype pre-production, you know, the show car, the original show car, so not exactly full production spec, just a gentle... electric whir around a car park. You know, it's not a full car.
So talk to us, because we've been a little bit dismissive of it, I think, over the last few months. When you're in it, when you're sort of riding in it and you're sitting in it, is it impressive? Is it a cool concept of a four-seater hypercar?
It's a completely unique thing, right? I always find this fascinating. If you talk about the world of hypercars, if you rewind back about 10 years, if you wanted to spend over £1 million on a car, you could buy a Bugatti Veyron. Done. If you want to spend over £1 million now, you don't even have to go further than each company to find multiple. Aston Martin, Valkyrie, Valhalla, various different Zagatos and continuation models. McLaren, Elva, Speedtail, Sabre. It's crazy how this world has completely exploded. I haven't even mentioned Bugatti, of course. Chiron Pursport, Chiron 300 Plus, Devo, Cento Dieci, La Voiture Noire.
Tony's going, I don't know what any of those are.
This is my, I guess, my part of the
this is his field.
Car world. But you now have a choice of about 40 different £1 million+ cars. It's completely mad, but so many of them effectively do the same thing. The Jimera sits entirely in its own spot. No one else makes an uber luxury hyper GT, like a four seat car, not something that's just for the racetrack.
For now, for sure.
Yeah. So is it almost like the first hyper SUV? You know, if Bentayga sort of kickstarted this super luxe high end SUV.
Yeah.
Is that maybe what
Jimera is the first that kickstarts the
hyper saloon or hyper something.
Hyper four seater, more than two seat. Well, more than two seats, Speedtail, T50, et cetera, et cetera, but four seats at least. So I think it's pretty cool. But then historically, if you look at any brand, you know, Ferrari and their four-seaters, Aston, Bentley, the four-seat cars go off a cliff in terms of values. And I have no idea what a Koenigsegg of this ilk will do in the future, but you've got to be conscious of that side of things. These are cars that if they get used, they get driven. You know, great to buy if you intend to keep and use it and run it. I don't know.
But it is a question mark, because, you know, also we spoke about the fact that I think, you know, the Koenigsegg customer is a very specific person at the moment. Maybe this is going to help widen up their customer base. And I definitely know that lots of people who have that kind of money are intrigued by the fact that you could have a four-seater hypercar. But it feels like that, yeah, Koenigsegg owners are Koenigsegg buyers, if that makes sense. Yeah. There's not too many.
How many are they making?
300 cars. And as I understand it, a lot of the customers are new customers. I know multiple people who don't own a Koenigsegg who have ordered a Jimera, which is it's really cool. And I don't know if you've met Christian von Koenigsegg, but the man is a genius. Everybody who works at that company is incredibly, incredibly clued on. And you feel that passion. If you ever meet with them, or you're there on the show stands, or if you go to the factory in Ängelholm in Sweden, it's amazing to spend any time around them, because I've just never seen anything like it in terms of the way they approach things and the way that everybody's so connected and future thinking. And you look at the technology in the Jimera, 2-liter three-cylinder engine,
It's not Ferrari, though, is it?
Classic Tony comment. But surely this is kind of also the future of our supercars, of our hypercars. If you look at F1 tech, which obviously my area, smaller combustion engines with, you know, either hybrid tech or e-fuels or whatever it might be, is surely the future where we're going to end up, rather than these hunk and great V12s, which we're you know, potentially going to wave goodbye to.
I honestly think that this might not go the way that everybody currently thinks it is. Obviously, there's this huge push right now from governments around the world, legislation, discounts, benefit in kind, bonuses, all sorts of things that make it easy to get into an EV in exactly the same way that two decades ago you could get into a diesel. I think we're yet to find what's next, and I hope that whatever it is allows us, you know, Porsche with their synthetic fuels, for example, I hope that whatever it is allows us to keep running V12s for our weekend fun while our normal daily cars can be EV where appropriate.
Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? If you have 80% of cars that are electric and leave the 20% for us petrol heads to drive around in at the weekends, I would be more than happy to drive an electric car around every day if I can charge it in 3 minutes, because that's how long it takes me to fill my car up.
That's a quick fill up. You can do it in 3 minutes.
No, but okay. Well,
I've seen him at a petrol station. He buys a chocolate bar. He's chatting to the bird behind the desk.
I've got 3 minutes. I've got time.
Busy man.
I'm very busy. Okay, 5 minutes.
Sure.
7 minutes if you're going in M&S because you have to queue up.
9 minutes if it's a pretty blonde behind the
If you're, if you're pulling into a fuel station, right, it's probably 10 minutes from when you pull in to when you leave. The difference with an electric car is you don't even have to spend that 10 minutes. You just plug it in when you get home and it's ready for the next morning.
As long as your journey is relatively short.
Yeah.
Within 175, 200, 250 miles, whatever it is. But then even if your journey is 250 miles, just stop somewhere and get a McDonald's or something and plug it in for 20 minutes.
Because I tell you what, I've done over 300 miles today.
Well done.
In the van.
Congrats.
It would have took me 2 hours longer in a EV. You can't go as fast either. Not for as long though. Not for as long.
You can happily cruise at 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
How fast do you want to go, Tony?
77.
Ooh. That is we're going to cut that out. But no, this is an ongoing discussion that we have pretty much every week at the moment on the podcast. And you're sort of amazingly on trend, or at least on trend with our thinking, which is, you know, we don't believe that the current situation, this real heavy push towards EVs, is the final solution.
No,
because
it's not.
It doesn't make sense globally. You know, there are places around the world, take South America, you can't expect them to be able to all transition over to EVs because, you know, they have parts of their country that just aren't accessible. You know, it just wouldn't make sense.
Even in the US. The US, there are parts of the US where it would never work.
It would never work. And so there has to be other solutions. And I think, interestingly, Lucas Degrassi, I know, Tony, you're a big fan, Formula E driver. he did an interesting tweet saying that Formula One really need to push for synthetic fuels. If anyone's going to lead the development in this, is anyone's going to showcase what's possible, it's them. It's relevant for manufacturers, or at least the manufacturers that are in that sport. As you say, it means that Formula One could switch back to a V12 or V10 and have the spectacle of Formula One and the sound, but in a sort of, you know, carbon neutral or green way, and keep Formula E for electric. You know, don't try and concentrate in other areas of planting trees, Formula One. Focus on the tech and the technology, because that's what's benefited the automotive world for so long from Formula One. Flappy paddle gearboxes and all these different things have trickled down from that sport. So I see synthetic fuels, maybe hydrogen, as interesting, you know, opportunities in the future. But yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like EVs are the final answer. But we have said this quite a bit. So
Do you like esports? Like Formula E and... Do you like that? Do you watch it?
Esports as in gaming, or esports as in electric racing?
No, as in e-racing.
EV racing.
EV racing.
I mean, I don't even know what it's called. That's how much
esports is the terminology for gaming.
Yeah. I mean, I don't do that either. But, I mean, you know what I mean.
I've been to a couple of Formula E races, and obviously been able
Did
to...
Did you take a pillow?
Did I take what?
A pillow.
A pillow. Just want to have a sleep.
Why would you also just take a pillow?
Smother yourself. I don't know.
That's what I'd do if I was at a Formula E race. Smother myself.
Nah, it's very different. You get into the kind of trying to follow the gamification side of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, understanding the different quirks and rules. And if you've come from a computer gaming background, it makes more sense. Okay. Obviously, they're street circuits, so they don't have the same, or in many cases, they're street circuits. They don't have the same high speed as Formula One or other things. But it's a completely different approach, and it makes more sense the more you follow it.
Yeah, for fair. Sure.
No, if you just watch one race, as a petrol head, it's very easy to say, oh, there's no noise, I don't care about this. Mm. But when you start watching a couple more and start understanding all of the intricacies of it, it actually gets much more exciting.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head there as well. I'm of a generation, I'm a little bit older than you two, and I'm of a generation where, yeah, we did have computer games back then, but not as prominent as it is now. Yeah. So maybe this generation probably get it a lot more than I do. So
yeah, I mean, as I said before, I think to attend a race, I think, is exciting for Formula E. I found it exciting, you know, to, as you say, to follow the storylines, to follow the sort of, you know, what's going on over a day. I think on TV it's dead, and you know, still for me, you know, as a motorsport nut, in inverted commas, you know, I don't follow a season, I don't watch every single race, but I do enjoy attending the events. But you're right, maybe that is a generational thing. Who knows? But you're also very stuck in your ways when it comes to EVs versus combustion engines.
Yeah, it's like my daughter's not going to know any different, probably. Mm. She's four. By the time she gets to drive, there won't be petrol cars.
Will she ever get to drive?
Or will she? Yeah,
exactly.
That's another question.
I mean, that's
the
big question.
Will everything be autonomous subscription services where effectively Uber becomes your...
There you go. I mean, I think the desire from young people to really own a car now is ever decreasing, right? Mm. What's the motivation? You know, if you lived in London today, I mean, I think that most people our age still question whether it's worth having a car in central London. Mm. So if you're growing up these days, well, let us know. If you're a younger listener, you know, well, actually, if you're a younger listener to this, you're going to be into Ferraris and Lambos and things like that.
Probably so, why the wrong
audience. Yeah, the wrong audience. Anyway, what I love is that, Tim, you've come on here and Tony has ever so slowly been trying to get you to agree with his bizarre thought process about life, and all you're doing is pushing him back, and he keeps...
No, he's not.
Yes, you are. You keep... What do you think about e-games?
No, I'm just asking him. Just asking him a question. It's just nice to have someone else to talk to apart from you.
Fair enough. Well, look, we're going to move on to McLaren. I think you saw this coming.
I did.
But actually, we would have talked about this whether you were here or not. At the beginning of the year, or actually even last year, we were talking about McLaren a lot. I had a great experience in the 720S Spider at the start of the year, a brand new car that I enjoyed a lot. And there were some positive noises coming out of us, but also out of McLaren themselves. However, this week, Tony, what did you discover?
McLaren are at it again.
So he calls me and he just says this. And I go,
McLaren are at it again.
Yeah.
So
explain.
What?
So they're doing unbelievable deals on 720s now. So the example I got, 249 car,
£249,000
car. I think it's £72,000 off.
Discount.
72 grand? Are you joking? It's 30%.
It's an F Type R.
Yeah, brand new, kind of unregistered
brand
stock car.
Spanking new stock car.
But stock, not your own spec.
Yeah. But that will be factory backs, that money, because obviously the dealer doesn't have anywhere near that sort of money in a car. So that will be McLaren saying there's 50 grand, say, contribution, and the dealer's got to do the 22. 16.99 a month, 16 grand deposit.
Oh, wow.
Three years, give it back 5,000 miles a year. I mean, it is really good value, but you're effectively just leasing a supercar. So it's going to cost
you 70 grand or something?
Yeah, a bit more.
Across 3 years?
Yeah, with the deposit, it's probably 80 grand. So it's 27, 28 grand a year, roughly, to run a supercar. Obviously, you've got to service it. But this is the problem that I have with McLaren. This is what's damaging the brand. Literally stuff like this.
Before we get Tim's opinion, let me just say, why does that upset you? Because surely for us, people who love supercars, that's a cracking deal. Like, is that not a great opportunity that we could go and live with a 720S for theoretically good money, like not that much money?
Yeah. So it doesn't upset me, by the way, because I'm not buying one. I couldn't give a toss. The biggest problem is if they're selling them new with that money off, how much is a used one?
So, well, what, within 12 months, a used one was 125.
Yeah. So,
true that.
Yeah. So when you want to come out of that car, say, because who keeps a supercar 3 years in general? Take him out of it.
I was about to give the example of my 675. I've had it for 5 years and it's cost me less than 27 grand a year if you average it out over 5 years.
Yeah. Well, but okay, so
fair.
Should we let, because I want to ask because Tim is you're definitely more of a McLaren fan, maybe, is that fair to say, or you're more
I mean, I've owned a few. I've had five.
You were.
I still have two of them.
Would you say, like, today you feel differently about the brand than you did 5 years ago when you were collecting your LT Spider?
So back at the very, when I had my 12C, which I bought in, I went to look at it in December 2013. So pretty early days of McLaren. P1 had just come out. 12C Spider was on the road. And for me, it was really exciting because McLaren weren't Ferrari or Lamborghini. They were this new, very tech-focused, exciting, you know, especially for me being somebody in that kind of space, social media, like, what's going on here? This is cool. It's different. So the 12C for me at the beginning was something quite different in it. They had foibles. You know, the infotainment, the Iris system was completely atrocious at the very beginning. And there were lots of things that didn't really work so well. And they had all sorts of issues, as they still do. The brand now, I would say, is very different. Obviously, the portfolio has expanded. And I was actually at McLaren just now having a look at Artura.
Oh, nice.
I went to the HQ, to the MTC, to take a look at it.
That's a problem, but we'll come back to that in a minute. That's a problem. I'll tell you why.
Just let Tim speak.
Yeah.
But it's not quite the same now. And one of the difficulties I think they have is that every car is so good and so fast that there is a lack of differentiation between them. Even a McLaren GT is stupidly fast. And in any real world situation, whether you're in the McLaren GT, it's stupidly fast, or the Speedtail, it's stupidly fast, or the Senna, it's stupidly fast. They're all stupidly fast.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, same thing, same,
yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
I think it's great that Artura is different engine, different gearbox, different tub. It's not the same car.
About time.
But it still falls into the same McLaren. It's really, really fast with a twin turbo something or other. And that is, you know, a difficult part of it. They've introduced a few things, I would say, finally, that are good, like having a service plan, having a 5-year warranty on Artura, things that make it more appealing to buy a new car, mm-hmm. which is probably brings us back to your 720 lease deal, because now if you order one, you want an Artura, not a 720.
Well, do you?
So what were you going to say? That
do you?
Artura is a problem.
An Artura, I'm not really sure I'm pronouncing it right, is 240 grand with some spec on it, right? Roughly.
With options?
With some options. They're about it may 240.
Maybe even a bit more, right? It's 185 base. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. 230, 240. So, on finance, that will be more than their Super Series car. Because 720S, they do unbelievable deals on. So, what's going to happen in a minute is someone's going to come in and go, I'd like to buy that car. And then turn round and see that the step-up car is less.
Well, if I had to read between the lines here, a bit of deja vu when, let's say, even the 650 came out and the 12C was still for sale, was the official line. 720 has kind of been superseded by 765 because you can go and buy a 765 if you want one.
Fair.
In some markets, not every market.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So Artura has kind of replaced 720, which is why they're getting rid of all these stock cars.
But it's not replacing 720, though. It's a step down.
Officially not.
Officially not, but real world, it is the next step of technology.
The next step of technology. But
and it's just as fast.
Fair. But you think that there's going to be a 770 Super Series car, right?
And that will probably step up to 400 grand.
It's a joke. The problem is as well, I get what you're saying. And the other problem is as well that I know you're saying that all McLarens are fast, and they are all fast, but so are all supercars in general.
Yes.
An Audi R8 V10 Plus is stupidly fast. An AMG GTR Pro, stupidly fast. A 488, normal base one, stupidly fast. Lamborghini Huracan, they're all stupidly fast and too fast for the road.
You're right, but I think the thing that frustrates me sitting here and listening to you talk is that despite all of our hope at the start of the year, or my good experience, the sort of our dreams to feel positive about McLaren again, we're here 3 months later looking at it going, it's still a mess. And that's really, I think, where they're losing so much customer confidence. Is not only are the products, you know, having issues and people have lost confidence in the actual cars themselves from a reliability or functionality point of view. But we're all sitting here now going, well, so is the Artura better than 720 or 720 is cheaper and concept with the LT replaced? Even though theoretically they now have these very clear lines of the Sports Series.
No. Sports Series is gone.
Sorry, the GT, the Super, the Artura. I mean,
yeah, theoretically. This is what I find confusing. Yeah. GT and Artura And then Super Series, which will end after the 765. And then Ultimate Series, which has too many cars as well.
So actually, it is just still a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as you say, then point proven, when you walked into a dealership saying, look, I want to embrace McLaren 2. I've heard things are getting better there. Let's buy a car. I want the Artura. Well, sir, did you know you could have a 720S for cheaper? I mean, it's just all a bit over the place.
Mm.
And Ferrari... Beloved Ferrari.
Not just Ferrari, mate.
Porsche, yeah. Lambo, etc.
Yeah.
Do they do a similar thing? Like, happen on... I guess Lambo don't make so many models, but surely with Ferrari, there must be a few final 488s when the F8's been launched that they've got to kind of push out the door?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, but they wouldn't do 35 or... No. Sorry, they wouldn't do 70-odd grand off.
Ferrari would find another way to do it. It would be more like, if you would like an SF90, yeah, you could pick up this 488 and trade it back in against the SF90.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, so they sort of safeguard themselves a bit in a different way.
Porsche do the same.
Porsche, brutal.
Yeah, they are. They're actually the worst, Porsche, for getting GT cars in terms of...
Oh, yeah.
They're the worst out of all of them. Lamborghini aren't going to like me for saying this, but they'll do 20 grand off a Huracan. But that's it. Normally, you won't get any contribution from the factory, but you'll get contribution from the dealer essentially.
If you get a
good dealer, that's the most you'll kind of get off a Lambo in general.
But at least it's a bit more straightforward with
it's
Lambo.
Not 72 grand off.
Well, it's not 72 You're grand. At least you know brand. There's basically two cars to choose from unless you want to get a Urus. I mean, it's a little bit more straightforward at least.
Yeah. Tim's getting a Lambo. You're getting a Lamborghini.
I'm getting a Lambo.
Your first one.
My first Lambo.
Have you spec'd the car up?
Yeah, like half an hour before I got here.
No way.
Okay, have
so
you
we,
really?
So we can't
like,
ask.
No joke. I've got the order to come, right? Like, just literally in my inbox.
Well, you can show us off camera. Yeah, after you can show us. So just to clarify, this is the Huracan STO, right?
Yeah, Super Trofeo. Omologato.
Omologato.
Very
so
good.
I want one just so that I can say omologato.
Yes, yes, cool.
So why now? Like, because... I had a Lambo fan moment a while ago, and I wanted a Mark 1 Garda Superleggera.
Which is cool, yeah.
Super cool, right? But I feel like you had this thing, so why did you suddenly decide now's the time for a Lambo?
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Lambo.
I wouldn't say it suddenly. I've had obviously a big connection with Lambo, filmed so many videos with Lamborghinis. And do you know what? I know with my audience that it's the number one brand. You don't have to look beyond filtering my videos on my channel to buy number of views to see that Lamborghini is what people want to see. They're all
up at
the very top.
We said this last week, didn't we?
So partly is wanting to satisfy the audience demand for the Lambo. That's where this kind of began, I would say. You know, I've been teasing it for years, working out what to go for. But partly is also having had so much experience of Porsches, Ferraris, McLarens, Aston Martins, I want to try what Lamborghini's like. Like, I want to know what it's like to buy a Lambo.
See what it's like to experience.
So
you could have just called me, I'd have told you.
Well, I do you know what? Back when the Performante launched, I put my name in the hat for a Performante. Mm-hmm. And it basically... I couldn't do it because it would have come at exactly the same time as my Ford GT and my Senna, and I was already broke.
Would have been.
It would have been one too many. It was already probably one too many. But anyway, the thing then was, you know, what would be the right car? And obviously, you've seen the rumors of the STO for a while, and this will talk about what you're going to come to, I think, with car collections. My collection is very road, but track variants. All track cars, lap record cars, that kind of thing.
It's my... preference of car as well.
So, you know, collections, whether it's cars, shoes, watches, whatever it is in life, generally have a theme, and that's my theme. So I had considered the SVJ a little bit, but I've never been a big fan of Aventadors. It's just
pile of shit.
I like the more dynamic, lightweight, nimble.
Sure.
You know, the McLarens, the Ford GT, that kind of style drive. And I had put my name in for the STO, but when I drove the Huracan Evo rear-wheel drive for the first time, it was unlike any other Lambo.
Good car, isn't it?
Take out the weight on the front axle. Take off that kind of clunky four-wheel drive, which obviously is what no purist driving enthusiast wants anyway. Make the steering a little bit more responsive and more connected. The car is a little bit lighter. Everything just feels so much better.
Mm.
And if the STO is, well, it is based on that. It is the track version of the rear-wheel drive. It, on paper, it ticks every box. I haven't driven one yet, obviously. So I just kind of like, now's the right time. That's the right car. And I like colourful cars, and I don't own something in this colour. So
you know what would be interesting?
A little tease there.
You know what would be interesting is the difference between that and the Black Series.
Oh, it's going to be fascinating. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
Taking delivery of two cars this year, which directly head-to-head compete with one another. Same price.
But in a very different way, right? I mean, they go about aggressive rear wheel
drive, rear-wheel drive, very fast, similarly priced.
Front mid, rear mid? Or front, what would you call?
Front mid versus rear mid, yeah.
Sages is heavy still, though, right?
I doubt it's much heavier than the STO. Probably a little bit heavier, but it won't be a lot.
How much lighter is it than the Pro and the AMG GTR?
The Black Series is no lighter than, well, like 20 kilos or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so it adds all the carbon wings and splitters.
Okay,
and
fair. So it's nearly still 1,600 kilos. I bet that STO's 1,300 kilos.
No.
I'm
going to go
STO
with
weight.
1,500.
The Perf was less than that.
Oh, Tony sometimes pulls it out of the bag. 1,339.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Just no. That's my maybe
dry weight.
Yeah.
Dry weight.
So it's early.
I mean, like really dry. So like being in the desert for 4 weeks dry.
We'll put mine on scales.
Okay.
There's but, a you know, I'm
there'd
putting
be 200
my...
kilos in them. There'd be 200 kilos in them. That's a lot, mate.
How much is a pista?
Light. 1280 dry.
Claim figure or real figure?
Yeah, Ferrari figure. 1280 dry. Yeah. And he's read it off a brochure somewhere, but yeah.
No.
I like to test him every now and again.
GT3 RS is very light as well.
Oh, don't.
The lightest of them all.
No, it's not actually.
Okay, so
Pista's lighter.
Fair enough.
Pista is...
Yeah, but the Pista isn't really lighter. It's just on paper lighter.
Don't you dare.
So,
be careful, Tim.
765 is light.
Yes, it is. Mm. The 765 is very light.
Yeah.
And McLaren are right with their numbers.
I won't do what every single member of your audience does and ask you why you're not getting one of those cars, Tim. But what I will do is ask...
Which car?
The 765 LT. Because we've just talked about... Yeah. We've talked about Black
Series. I've got enough McLarens.
Okay.
And enough 300 and something thousand pound track supercars coming this year.
Yes, you do.
I don't need another one.
Is your audience predominantly still US? Or is it... I mean, I know it's global, but is your largest demographic...
Yeah, US is massively...
Really?
So people don't realise this, but for me of views, US is kind of 32, 33%. UK is about 10.
What's yours? UK is 27, 28, then US at 21, 22.
It's interesting, isn't it? But I filmed so much in the US, so you'd expect that.
Well, the reason I asked is because we noticed this when we were talking about YouTuber car collections last week. The Americans pretty much all have Lamborghinis.
Mm. Yeah.
And you mentioned there was a kind of desire from your audience. And I wonder whether that is a thing, you know, that the American audience just lap up and love Lamborghini content. And this does bring me on to our sort of bigger topic and our bigger discussion is that you should have said that you were buying that car really to... So to give the audience what maybe they want to see.
It's part of that. I wouldn't say it's exclusively that, but it's all the different factors. I mean, if I got £1 for every person over the last few years who's asked me why I don't own a Lamborghini or when I'm buying a Lamborghini, I wouldn't be paying for this STO.
Okay.
It would be great.
We should start up a GoFundMe page that does something like that, shouldn't we?
He's already got a couple of them running.
And every time
STG Blend.
Every time somebody sends me a message, I should just send them the GoFundMe link back.
That should literally be how you do it.
That might be a stretch too far, but I definitely think you're right. I think Lamborghini have always in many ways represented an inspirational kind of thing of that more passionate and exciting appeal to everybody, not just car people. You know, it's a Lamborghini. You must have done something crazy to have a Lamborghini kind of thing. And there's such a more positive attitude to supercars in the US and the UK. Big time.
Yeah.
I think in general, and again, you know, we've said that it's that kind of like go get 'em attitude. It's that American dream or that sort of mentality of success should be celebrated, where in some parts of the UK, some parts of Europe, it can sometimes be, you know, a negative, you know, to show off your success or to go and treat yourself. You know, people can look down on that or you know, be aggravated by that. While in America, you know, you buying a Senna and a Ford GT, you know, so close together would have been like, wow, this guy's so cool. And
well, I can summarize this in a nutshell. I have done quite a lot of driving in the US in your face cars. Obviously the last 3 months has been in my GT500. It's not supercar, but it's bright green and it's full of carbon wings and stuff. So it stands out
very loud.
In the entire time driving that car, and I did 7,500 miles in it already, I've had whoops, cheers, thumbs ups, cool cars, all sorts of things. On my second day driving here in the UK, I had someone screaming and shouting and waving very negatively from the side of the road. I'll leave it there.
Welcome back to Britain.
Yeah, and I was like, great, I'd forgotten what this was like.
What car were you in?
The Ford GT.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Stands out. And I can...
I mean, I'll shout and scream.
at that specific point, I can absolutely confirm I was going 4 miles an hour below the speed limit, so it was not to do with speeding.
But it looks quick standing still, that car.
It does, yes. Yeah.
Is the GT500 coming back here? Or is it
will do, yes.
Okay, nice.
Sure.
I'm super intrigued by that thing. I think it looks cool.
You have to drive it.
Yeah, it's like a beastie.
It will be
sort of
so
monster.
Funny here. And it's so inappropriate for London.
I can only imagine. It must be. And it's loud from factory, right?
No, it's silly loud.
Silly loud.
It's silly, silly, silly loud.
It's a cool thing, Tony.
It's silly loud. It's stupidly big and wide.
Yeah. It's Americana. It's kind of fun, right?
Fuel efficiency?
Single figures?
I've never seen anything like it. Oh, it's so bad.
Not an Aventador.
It's got to be worse. I mean, it's probably bigger and heavier than an Aventador is. It's more powerful than most Aventadors. 760 horsepower.
760.
It's just it's
0 to 60 in 7 seconds.
0 to 60 in probably 2 point something. I don't know. It's
no.
Tony, it's 1980.
Really fast.
It's a proper car. This
the GT500 is not interested. Is genuinely. I'm going to get him to drive mine.
Please,
just to experience it.
Because this happens, right? This happened with the GR Yaris.
Yeah.
He came in here. He hadn't driven it. He just watched a load of YouTube content. He was like, oh, this piece of crap Yaris. Who cares? Like, it's never going to be any good. Trying to slag it off from what he'd read online. Went and drove one. Oh, it's pretty good, actually, that Yaris. Yeah. So
the thing with the GT500 is you get out of it with a smile on your face. Obviously, it's a Mustang, so the interior is that of a $20,000 car. It's not fancy.
How much is it? Oh, look, can I ask that?
Yeah, it's the car with... So my car is what they call the carbon fiber track pack, which is unnecessary and over the top, and that comes in at 106,000 US.
Which is what, 70 or 80 grand?
Yeah, about 80 grand.
Yeah.
So actually, quite interestingly, I had, as a press loan for my last week in Miami, a new M3 competition just before I collect mine here. And the M3 and my GT500 were very, very closely priced.
Interesting. But obviously, very differently in terms of horsepower.
I know what one's going to lose the most money out of them cars.
Well, in America, how did the Mustangs do?
The GT500 hold up. When I say the price, that's including dealer markup. So the actual list price is a little bit lower than that.
Oh, sorry, Tony, were you going to say the M3 is the one that's going to lose the money?
Oh, 100%.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were just...
Yeah, M3s will dive. For
they
sure,
always do.
And all new M cars and you know things like that do. But the GT500 is just a silly thing. Like I said, it's like a $20,000 car. Mine has $20,000 of carbon wing and carbon wheels. It's my only car with carbon wheels is my Mustang. So carbon wheels are like that ultimate. I'm going to spend a lot to save that little bit of weight, and I have it on a freaking Mustang.
On a Mustang, I love it.
But then the whole of the your last $60,000 is on a stonking engine.
Yeah, fair.
And the engine and the 7-speed dual clutch. The shifts are like a Porsche PDK. They just bang through the gears.
What about suspension and brakes?
Surprisingly good. MagnaRide suspension system, which no other car I own has as much variation between its kind of comfort mode and its track mode, which is what makes it quite so good around a circuit. I had a track day in it, and really impressive.
I think I would hope that you would be impressed. I think we've got to try and somehow make that happen, because I think your eyes would be opened. He'd still get, even if he enjoyed it, he'd still get and go, I'd never have one.
No, well, I wouldn't. If I liked it, I'd say fair play. It's good and I like it. Let's go flat round Silverstone.
Do it. Just prepare to go to a fuel station every 20 miles. Sam, I'm going to lend you the keys at some point, and you have to take Tony for a drive.
I would love to do that. That was a very kind offer.
Very kind.
Well, look, you mentioned M3s losing a lot of money. Which I guess you're going to experience because you've got one coming, right?
Yeah.
So look, come on, let's get into it, because car buying, car collecting on YouTube and in real life, I think is very different to what it potentially was 5 years ago, even.
Oh yeah.
When you could be potentially running a car, doing some miles in it, and then selling it for 20, 30 grand profit quite easily. Like, it was a done thing. And I feel like a lot of people got into the game because they thought they could take advantage of these bubbles or these kind of values. With what we do, inherently, I don't know how I'm going to try and say this, but essentially, you must buy cars for content, right? There must be cars that you go, I'm purely buying that because I think I can make money out of the content. And therefore, if it loses a ton of money, who cares? Because hopefully I've made more of it, I suppose. So at what point do you look at a car and go, the M3, I'm just going to use an example. How much do you have to be aware of how much it could lose? Does that change your mentality over how much content you could create with it?
Every car I buy is a calculation of sorts, including the business element. Okay. In terms of what am I going to shoot with this car? What's the storyline? What videos am I going to make? Who could I work with? What doors will it open up? You know, direct example here is the McLarens. If I buy a 765LT, it's a lot of money to spend for no more audience than my Senna.
Interesting.
For example, whereas M3, I don't currently own a BMW. So there's a lot of value of having a BMW back in the garage for those kind of events and activities and things and what that might enable me to do around it. So there's always that, what's the video going to be angle? But there's also, of course, the personal angle, you know, which car do I want? And there might be something in the garage that at this point in time is probably like one day shy of being posted.
I'm always with the exclusives.
And this is a car, okay. This is a car that is probably slightly less of one that I've gone into thinking, oh, this will do well online, because it won't.
Okay.
But it's a car that...
It's an emotional...
Yeah, it's a car that I wanted. It's
so
a car
that's a
that
question
I
that I had for you. Do you buy cars for YouTube or because you want them?
It's a complete mix. There are certainly cars that I have bought and are buying for YouTube. And do you know what? The funniest example of this I can give you is my first AMG GTR. I ordered the first AMG GTR before the GTR was revealed. So it was like a guess it would be the GTR. And actually a lot of people thought that would be the Black Series at the time. And I ordered that thinking I need to get a Mercedes in the garage. I've not owned an AMG before. So I wanted to make those videos. So I actually ordered that car. No idea if I was going to like it. I loved the SLS at the time to make videos. It just so happens I then kind of fell in love with it. And
okay. I bought 55 more.
55 more. Yeah, but literally.
So taking the YouTuber sort of side out of it, I suppose, for 2 seconds, do we think nowadays that sort of, you know, all cars going to lose money now? Because
yeah,
that's the thing. It's a different world, right?
I get so many direct messages asking me, you know, I've got a slot for this car. Will I make money on it? And from people who are in the position of buying cars like GT Black Series STO, for example. But I can't understand how people might still think that a car like a GT Black Series or an STO is going to make money.
Yeah.
Like, they will not. They will lose. Like, I am very aware that these two cars I'm taking delivery of this year, GT Black Series quite soon and the STO, I think in Q3 or Q4, they're both going to tank 100 grand in 2 years.
But like, that's refreshing to hear from an owner as well, by the way, bearing seeing from my, because it's my job, obviously. So over the years and certainly recently, and I think it's been fueled by social media and you guys, that people genuinely do think that they can get in and out of these cars for free. Because unfortunately, and not you two actually, some YouTubers portray online that they're driving these cars around for free and misleading people, and that has never been the case. We know that there was a really small period where, you know,
well, I think in many cases if you're the first to take delivery of something and you get out of it within 2 months,
yeah,
you know, if you have a GT Black Series in your garage now while supply is very, very low,
yeah,
and you want to sell it, you could probably get 50 grand over.
You get some money,
but that same car in 6 months is not worth overs anymore.
No, that's right. Yeah. But that what I'm saying is that period of time was longer back then, a few years ago.
Yes.
It wasn't 2 months. Like look at Performantes for an instant. There was a good 6, 8, 10 months where there were overs, and then all of a sudden people were ordering them, putting them online, and then there's an oversubscription of cars, and then they start doing that, because that's genuinely what happens. Yep. Even like normal 488s in 16, 17, they were 20 grand over list. Ferrari dealers send them for, that's a normal mainstream car. So, but that has definitely gone, you're right. That. But it's just refreshing to hear from an owner that buys cars, because we do know that quite a lot of, again, I'm not digging out YouTubers in general, but we do know that some YouTubers buy cars to think that they're going to make money on them, or they're ordering because they're going to make money on them. And it's nice to hear that you don't, you've never done that, and you don't do that.
No, the cars that I probably could have made money on if I'd sold them very quickly, I never did. So I mean,
10,000 miles on them instead.
Yeah, I mean, I can name specific examples. My 675 LT Spider, when I took delivery of that, I had an offer of six figures over what I paid for that on it, and I turned it down. And I kind of regret that a little bit now, but I bought the cars to buy it. And obviously my Ford GT, if I hadn't abused the daylights out of it, I could have probably sold it for stupid money over what I paid for it two years ago.
So moving forward, I mean, you mentioned that you're about to reveal a car, which we won't push you on. But
no, let's push you.
I knew Jenny would say that. Is your mentality shifting at all? Because we sit here week on week and we glorify the sort of the 50K mark at the moment. We're loving the sort of amount of cars you can get new and used in that sort of slightly more affordable way. I also am a huge modern classic fan. So all of my attention goes to cars that, you know, now are sort of late noughties, early noughties. And that's what I obsess over. From your point of view, someone who's always bought the latest and the greatest, are you now slightly thinking differently about what you're buying?
So I did a video recently driving a Lexus LFA, which has been one of my favorite cars for a long time, in which I talked about how I would love to get one, but I'm not about to, firstly, because they are significantly more expensive than I could have bought one 5 years ago. Mm. And personally, I feel like I missed the boat. You know, I don't want to pay double now what I could have had one for not very long ago. And that I would never be able to live with myself doing it. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Maybe they keep going up and up and up and then that's too bad for me. Or maybe one day I'm in a position where that makes less difference. But the other is that, and I said it straight in the video, is that at the end of the day, if I do buy a car that's older, there's less of a YouTube story around it. And that does have an impact. You know, something like my SLS Black Series, I made a whole plan. I wanted an SLS for years and years and years. There was no secret about that. I made a whole plan of how I was going to respray it, rentec it, do everything with it. So it was kind of like having a new car because I made it mine and I had a whole series of content and so forth. So it adds in that element. And I think I have, you know, plenty of cars I would love, the LFA, the Carrera GT, for example, but all of these cars have elevated so far in price from, you know, I remember being offered a CGT for just over 200 grand. And I remember an LFA for about 200 grand. And it's like, I can't pay triple those figures now.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, hindsight's a great thing. And Tony will tell you that the Carrera GT should still be worth 200 grand. But
No, I won't. It's just that some of the bizarre figures that get quoted, what they're going to be, I think are unrealistic, to be honest. And it's weird hearing you both talking about values and prices. And it's a bit of a trade-off for you guys, is that if you buy an older car, especially you, because you buy the modern stuff, it doesn't do quite as well online, but the car loses less money. Yeah. Whereas you buy a modern car, it loses more money, but it's more prominent online. So it's a bit of a balancing act in terms of where you go in the market. And I know you're both switched on. So,
and you know, if you look at our business, we do pretty much the complete opposite, where at the moment, at least, I am buying older, crapper stuff.
Yeah.
whereas, Tim, you do tend to buy much newer stuff. Have you been tempted by something, I'm going to say old. I know you had your Mini, and I know that you've dabbled at SLS Black Series, but like something, I'm going to say pre-2000. and secondly, has there been anything which you bought expecting to either fly and it didn't, or expecting to hold its money better and it didn't? As in, see what I mean?
Interesting. So the first question, anything pre-2000, there is something very firmly on my radar for pre-2000. Significantly older, actually.
Okay, bloody hell.
But not too expensive. So this is one of those, when I have the space for it in my garage, that's the time to do it. So
it's not a Mercedes Pagoda, is it?
No, not a Pagoda. Oh. Other part of the question, whether things will fly, I don't think I have ever bought a car with the intention of its value flying.
What about YouTube views?
I have certainly bought cars with the expectation their YouTube views would fly. And the biggest surprise to me, but I do think I know the answer to it, is probably a surprise, the GR Yaris.
Okay.
My audience seems to have, I can't obviously speak for everyone, very little interest in the GR Yaris. And I think it's because it's not available in the US.
Because everyone's
got one. Such a large portion of my audience is US.
And everyone's got one.
Yeah, but that happened with the Supra in our world, where, you know, when the Supra came out, you could say everyone had...
My Supra videos flew.
But everyone's Supra's videos, I think, flew at the time. It was one of those cars.
Do you remember when I filmed the Yaris? I said I weirdly thought it was going to be like the A110, the Alpine, where I think every single journalist was going to say how incredible it was. Everyone going to say it's brilliant. But would people really care? Like, would people go and buy it? And would people really care?
So I think it's twofold to this. It's such a attainable car, and everybody who has one creates content with it. So it's almost this like balance of there are loads and loads of videos about it relative to the interest. Whereas obviously the supercar type things, there's loads of interest, but not very much content.
Sure.
I haven't yet done much driving in the GR Yaris, I will admit. So I'm looking forward to actually getting it down some country lanes and starting to feel what it's all about. But that was certainly a little bit of a surprise in terms of audience interest. Because it seemed like everyone around us is hyped for this car. Of course, it ticks every car guy's box, mm-hmm. Every box for a car guy. But like I say, when I uploaded it, I was really surprised that it wasn't.
I've sort of, yeah, almost long suspected it or seen it. There was just something about the car when it was so much noise and so much positivity, it almost lost a bit of its excitement for some reason. I was so hyped about that car, even from one of the very early teasing of it and the earliest rumours. I was like, this is going to be my dream kind of car. And yes, it's brilliant, but because I think everyone's talked about how brilliant it is, after a while you're a little bit, it's like when you haven't seen a movie, like Game of Thrones. And you haven't seen Game of Thrones. Have you seen Game of Thrones? Because, this is exactly my example. Because it's Game of Thrones and everyone will tell you, it's the best TV series ever, you're probably never actually going to sit down and watch it. Mm. Because you're a bit like, oh, the moment's sort of passed and everyone bangs on about it. Oh, so good, so good. I don't know. I think something out there which is a little bit more different or quirky, you hear like Fiesta ST. It's so good, it's so good. And I actually think there would be almost weirdly more interest in something like that nowadays than a GR Yaris, because everyone knows they're brilliant. What's the interesting story? It's really good. What? Yeah. But there's nothing else to say. It's just really, really good.
Whereas on the flip side, something completely different. Everything I do talking about my STO flies. Everything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Like, just.
But Lamborghini in general, you know, if you put a Lamborghini on Instagram or you see one on Instagram, the likes, you put it on YouTube, like it's just that sort of brand, isn't it? You know what I mean? It just attracts attention, full stop.
I think so. It's always, you know, always a winner. If you can put them in a title, it's always a winner. Okay, so I guess, how do we round this out? I kind of wanted to ask you if there was one car which you kind of missed and regret, but I feel like LFA, Carrera GT, you kind of touched on slightly.
Yeah, miss buying for sure.
And so at this point, how big does the collection go, I suppose? Because I get the feeling, I know you say that other things go into it, emotion and blah, blah, but every time we've spoken about any car, you have pulled it back to content. I don't know if you've realised that.
No, for sure. Big part of it. Even the SLS, I completely accept that. I make no secret that if I didn't run the Shmi 150 YouTube channel, and if I hadn't had this path, and I still had the job that I had working in an office before, I might have one nice car. Because I am a car guy, I would probably own I would imagine a 765 LT would be what I had just bought. And maybe I would have a Lusso as well. But I certainly would not have the cars that I do have. Or like, it just wouldn't be.
So do you think you've almost forced yourself to keep buying? Like are you almost like an addict where the sense...
Of course, I love it.
But it is also addictive. We've spoken about like buying a new car. Like,
it's an adrenaline rush. It's exciting.
Huge adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
But also your channel now, because you're always in or buying or speculating around the greatest and newest cars, are you kind of in that sort of... Not rut's a really weird way to speak about it, but if you look at the channels with big collections, you know, here in the UK, JWW, TG, yourself, over the other side, you've got Adam LZ and Stradman, maybe in some way. You know, there's that kind of thing where you kind of have to keep going, right? Like, where does it end?
Of course you do. Of course you do. And I feel, you know, very lucky that I can say, hey, I would like to do that and buy that car, knowing that, hey, my business can grow off the back of it. You know, it's kind of surreal and quite unique on a global perspective to be in that position. And that certainly skews the decisions for sure. There's no way I would, you know, this year I'll probably take delivery of 7 or 8 cars this year. And there's no way. There's no way I would do that.
But on the flip side, Tony, in the non-YouTube world, would you say that a lot of other collectors are actually downsizing because of global situation?
Yeah. Well, Tim's already said he doesn't buy cars to, you know, there's a big reason why he buys cars, because it's his business. He's on a conveyor belt. You know, it keeps his business going. It's why he has to do it. most people with that are wealthy and that have got a lot of money, they've got a lot of money for a reason, in the general public, I mean, and they do not like losing 100,000, 100, it doesn't matter how much money you got. Most people work very hard to get that money, and they don't like losing that amount of money. So, yeah, you know, lots of my friends over the last couple of years, it's not that they can't afford it, you know, and there's quite a lot of people out there that think that the more cars you got means you got a lot of money. It doesn't mean anything at all.
I do not like losing 100 grand on a car. Just going to say this, by the way.
No, I know you don't, but what I'm saying is that that's part of your job. It's the reason, one of the reasons why you do it. Some of these people, they're very wealthy and they don't want to blow that money and they're not doing it anymore. So they're definitely been in their collections for sure and having one or two or not at all.
So you know. I think it's interesting to see that on YouTube, it's still a very strong formula, you know, building a collection, having multiple cars, it is still of interest to an audience. But then on the flip side, actually, maybe there's a move just at the moment, and I'm sure it will change and recover as the world changes over the next 3-5 years. But yeah, other collectors, and I've noticed it on Instagram, are sometimes downsizing. But then, of course, you went to visit a Triple F collection, I think it was.
Yeah, they're going to be opposite of downsizing.
The opposite. So it's hard to read. I think, you know, we do sit here often just speculating and discussing about the supercar world, the car collecting world. And I think it's been super interesting, Tim, having you here and having someone who's kind of like right in that mix of collecting, YouTubing, and buying and sort of selling the latest and greatest. And I think, you know, fundamentally, there's not a sort of rule or rhythm to it yet. It does seem like cars aren't holding or getting the big overs, but there's still great cars to be bought and still fun to be had.
And I think there's quite a lot of people as well. I know you guys don't like it, but you influence a lot of people. And I think what they do is they look at you and they look at you and they look at all the YouTubers and they think, and they've got normal jobs, good jobs, but normal jobs. I've got a few quid. I'm going to have 5 or 6 cars. But it's not, you know, and then they go to work and they go and do a desk job. Like what you said, if you'd done a normal desk job, you'd have 2 cars. Yeah. But these guys have aspirations because of YouTube and because of social media. I've got a few quid, I can do that.
Just keep going.
Yeah.
And then they start a YouTube channel 3 months later.
Yeah, but they don't often get the mechanics behind YouTube and how it runs and how you guys are paid and how you offset stuff and stuff like that. They just think he's buying a car, he's selling it. I can do that and I won't lose no money. They don't get it. Do you know what I mean?
So the topic of losing money on a car, my attitude is to effectively, if I know a car is going to lose a lot, I go into it intending to keep it. Fair. So the GT Black Series, I'm not going to sell. The STO, I don't intend to sell. Yeah. Because if I was sitting here thinking, oh, I'll run it for a year and then sell it for 75,000 less than I bought it for, I wouldn't buy it.
The 675 is a really good example.
Where you've just kept it and it's just
yeah, yeah. By the time it started going down, I just said, right, I'm keeping it.
Yeah, okay.
And enjoy it and love it and do more things with it.
Yeah, because he runs it as a business and he writes it down every year. I know a lot of people, you won't know what write down is, but he writes it down every year. And over the course of the period of time, the longer you have the car, the less you lose every year. So that's just
effectively.
There we go. Well, look, it's been fascinating having you on. Thank you so much for coming and joining us.
Pleasure.
Even if you are, you probably recovered from your jet lag, haven't you?
I don't really get jet lagged anymore.
Oh no,
too much travel. Even without much travel, the last 12 months, jet lag isn't.
You're just constantly in a weird
sleep.
If you're
own
time,
if you're always tired, it doesn't make a difference.
I'm gonna go for it. Schmime zone. No, that didn't really
work. No, Sam.
But of course, if you want to follow any of Tim's adventures, he's at Shmi150 pretty much everywhere. So anywhere, just, you know, literally in Sainsbury's, call out Shmi150.
I wouldn't do that in Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's?
Stop. I got him started and now I regret it. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales. I'm at Seen Through Glass. If you want to try the wonderful Seen Through Glass blend from Perla Coffee, these are actually empty bags. Sorry, I just ruined the illusion there. Head over to drinkperla.co.uk/STG and we'll be back with you next week. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.